guys, channel members in here. Definitely appreciate it. Training camp is on the way. And we got some stuff to talk about, man. Drew Holiday. And before we get to the panel opinions on Holiday, I want to play this clip from Brian Windhorst that came out earlier today. This is courtesy of the Hoop Collective podcast. He had some interesting things to say about Holiday and the Knicks jumping into the fray. Here's what Windhorst had to say. All right, we're going to pause that there. That was Brian Windhorst, courtesy of the Hoop Collective podcast, ESPN's podcast. Zach Lowe, also on his podcast, mentioned that the Knicks should jump into the fray, and then later on his ESPN.com article said that the Knicks and the Pacers are two teams that he expects to have interest there. So, John, I ask you, if you're Leon Rose, do you go get Drew Holiday, man?
I've been thinking about this a lot, and I'm honestly going back and forth, and I hope this conversation that we're going to have here can maybe clear this up. I'm curious what you guys think about this, because my immediate thought has always been, given the youth on this team, I do not want to trade for a player over 30 years old, unless it's, you know, someone that is a can't-miss type of guy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that guy exists, to be honest with you. I would even be worried about Embiid, given his injury history, and I don't want to build a team around a non, you know, point guard skilled center like they have out in Denver, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that immediately makes you want to say no. However, here's the problem. He fits next to Brunson extremely well. I love Drew Holiday as a player. They don't need him to be a big-time offensive player and primary ball handler for them. He would probably be their third option offensively, which would be fine. The problem that I can't get around is the salary stuff. You know, you're probably going to have to pay him after this year. You're probably going to have to pay him somewhere between $35 and $40 million. How does that impact your future flexibility in landing another star in a trade, right? There's all the apron rules coming and all that stuff, and it gets more complicated. But what's the cost? And I really think that's the question here. We can't just say yes or no to Drew. Yeah. I think it's yes or no based on what the cost is. And I think Windhorst picked out the wrong Knicks young player to talk about here because it's not Emmanuel Quickly because he doesn't make a big salary.
Right.
Player that would have to go out in this trade is RJ Barrett. And he makes that amount of money. You combine him with Fournier, and you're rocking. I mean, you're hitting what you have to hit to bring in Drew Holiday. And then the Knicks have all these protected picks, right? How much of the Blazers like RJ Barrett as a player? I don't know the answer to that. Nobody does. But would you have to trade an unprotected pick, you know, past this year or next? Probably not. I mean, if you're trading RJ and Fournier, could you get away with trading the Mavs pick and the Wizards first round pick? Could you get away with that? Would they take that? You know, would they want more of a future pick? Maybe they want to control all the Bucks assets. Maybe you give them the Bucks pick in 25 and then you give them the Wizards pick. Do you have to give them one of your own? When do you have to give them that pick? Is it an early pick? Is it later? So I think that's what we're talking about here. If we're talking about, in my opinion, if we're talking RJ, Fournier, the Wizards pick, and then, you know, either the Mavs pick or the Knicks pick this year, I'm in. I think I'm willing to do that as a short-term improvement where if something goes wrong in either Milwaukee or Boston this year, I think the Knicks are the second-best team in the conference, and I don't think it's close, to be honest with you. Then you make your decision on Holiday after the year. And to Windhorst's point, I think that price is low enough where you're still rocking and rolling with all of your first-round picks. You still have your probably best two future ones you've gotten from other teams in Detroit and Milwaukee, right? You still own those in that scenario. You could trade all your picks. By then, you would have traded Quickly. So, I mean, you would have extended Quickly, pardon me. So his salary will be up in the 20s. So he becomes a guy that you could trade in the future for a star if you need to, right? And I think it works. I'm not 100% sold on it, and maybe you guys can convince me otherwise because I'm not all in on this either way. But we talked about this before. The list of superstars that could become available is dwindling.
It's dwindling.
You know, how long can you afford to wait when you have to pay Brunson in 2 years and, you know, putting all those other factors in, you know, you got to start paying your young guys, then you got to pay Grimes. It gets complicated. Julius Randle is going to be a free agent in 2 years, by the way. He's going to opt out. He's not going to go in the final year of his deal.
Yeah.
So you have like a two-year timetable here. If you do this kind of sub-move here, you still have assets for a bigger move later. I think it does move you into the 55-win conversation rather than the 50-win conversation, which I think puts you into the three-seed conversation. To me, and I'm not as high on Barrett as other Knicks fans, I'm sure you got people calling NCP ready to kill me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they're ready to go. The RJ Barrett hive is always coming for me. I'm used to it by now. Come, bring it, guys. Bring it. But look, much like Tyler Hero, I don't think RJ Barrett's ever going to be an all-NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, and we're going to talk about him in camp and what he needs to get better at this year, right? But he does not – maybe he'll make one all-star team in his career, maybe a second one in a down year where, the East is down or something. But he's not, to me, a top three player on a really good team. I think he's a fourth guy. And if that and no unprotected picks that can later become, back-breaking, you don't have the fourth pick in the draft and you're going to lose out on some star, I think that's a small price to pay for bringing in a guy that does legitimately move the needle for you in the short term. Long answer, but that's where I'm at.
And just like that, we got callers on the line. They are calling in, ladies and gentlemen. 657-383-1509. Rate that take in the chat. We're going to rate a guest take tonight. One being trash, five being facts. Are you with John? Are you throwing tomatoes? Let us know, man. Call us up or hit us up on the Knicks Fan TV
Where
Discord.
Are you guys at? Where are you guys at with that?
Chat is split right now. We're getting some tomatoes. Right. John, you're being made into ketchup, and some people are praising you for the idea of trading
RJ. I like
RJ
ketchup.
Right now.
It's okay. Ketchup.
So here's my thing. I've always loved Jrue Holiday. Always loved Jrue Holiday, the player, floor general, leader, defensive force, one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, if not the best. Just made the all-star team last year. Milwaukee went all in on him, and he helped them deliver a championship. He is that guy. Yes, he has.
Where's the butt, CP?
He has.
Where's the butt?
Offensive limitations.
Oh, it's coming.
Here it is. The fit is not what I'm arguing here with Jrue Holiday. Him and Brunson can play off of each other. Brunson can play off of him. I think there's some situations where you would argue you would want Brunson playing a little off ball as well, given his 3-point prowess and given what the Knicks need there from an offensive standpoint. The fit is fine, but the timeline to me doesn't fit.
No, it's fair.
It doesn't fit. And what Windhorst said in the second part of that clip, which I didn't play because I wanted to get to the show, but what he says is basically you go get Jrue Holiday and that appeals to a Joel Embiid, where now all Joel Embiid has to do is say, I want the Knicks, and the Knicks just go get him. It's not that easy. Damian Lillard was preaching Miami, 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 and he's going to Milwaukee. When you don't have leverage, you don't control your destiny. And so to just say it's a slam dunk where Daryl Morey is just going to give Grant Joel Embiid his wish, trade him to a team within the division when 29 other teams are going to have something to offer just as good as the Knicks, if not better, you can't do that. And so my thing is, from a timing standpoint, a Jrue Holiday trade is the last move you make, the last piece to the puzzle, not the second to last. Like, I can't go get – I can't – and yes, I don't – think RJ is going to hit that all-star ceiling. He might not. But for me to go in on maybe a one-year rental on a Jrue Holiday, because he's got a 1+1 player option, right? Then he's going to want, if he stays in the league, we don't know if he's going to retire, but then he's going to want at least, if he does stay, at least a 3 or 4 year deal, which takes him into 38, 39 years old. So you do that all while throwing a Hail Mary at a Joel Embiid, and if he doesn't come, then what do you have? You know what I mean? Like, I love Jrue Holiday, but to me, you get him after you get that last guy. Once you get your guy, then you get Jrue Holiday to seal the deal. This is what a Boston needs, a Clippers, maybe even a Philadelphia, depending on what happens with Harden. Those teams that he's one piece away from helping them achieve their goal. For the Knicks, I still feel like you need that other guy to justify a 33-year-old Holiday.
CP, I agree with everything you just said. Here's my counter to you. How does getting Jrue Holiday hurt you?
It doesn't hurt, but at the expense of a young player, I just don't feel like to take a short-term gamble on Jrue Holiday while you hope and pray that you get somebody to make it all worth it.
Yeah, but aren't you already hoping and praying that you're going to get somebody to make it all worth it? Aren't you already in that mode anyway?
Yeah, but at least if I if I keep RJ here and some of my other younger players, you keep those assets, hope they improve, and then trade them for another piece down the road. Maybe it's another upstart, another Brunson type that's ready to break out, right? You might not get an Embiid or Giannis, but maybe it's another player. I just feel like a 33-year-old Holiday on a 1+1, when you don't know what the next move is going to be, I mean, sure, it could take us probably to the Eastern Conference Finals. And as you said, if things break right, you know, knock on wood, God forbid, there's an injury or you know, a lackluster play, maybe they things break right and they get to it. But I still don't think that puts them that much closer if they don't have that final piece.
No, look, I think you make a good point. This is why I'm not completely sold on it. But you're right. Age is the big thing that worries about me. What are you going to do about the next contract, right? I think that's a legitimate worry. But I'm also starting to think you're still going to have the assets to make the big move later. And in the way the NBA is now, it's really hard to plan outside of three-year windows, right? Things change so much now in this sport. You know, opening up your three-year window, and I think he's 33, so, you know, you hope he'll still be pretty good by 36, right? Beyond that, I think, to your point, if you decide to do a four-year deal, that's a problem. Maybe before you make this trade, maybe you talk to him, well, can you do a two-year extension? Would he be okay with that? You know, maybe that's a conversation you have. I don't know if he'd be willing to do that. He might say, no, I want 4 years or nothing, dude. Yeah. And then maybe you rethink the conversation. But I do wonder if you can think outside of those, you know, three-year windows now when it's so difficult to predict. You know, Luka could ask out in 2 years for all we know. You know, there isn't any way to know these things. So that's why, again, I'm not like head over here. This is a no-brainer. We got to do it because the age thing and the timeline thing is a real problem. And it does break my trade rule. Don't trade for anyone over 30. But I'm just seeing it's really thinning out the number of guys that could become available in the next 2 or 3 years before that Brunson contract comes up. So I almost hate to pass on opportunities because you don't know what's coming next. You know what I mean? When's going to be your next shot? You know, if Donovan Mitchell becomes available, maybe he wants to go to the Heat. And then even though you have the best offer, like the Cavs just traded to Miami.
Yeah.
Like you don't know how this is going to go. So I'm taking a risk. I think it's actually riskier to make that trade than to not make the trade. Not making the trade is very much the more conservative approach. But I just, again, if the value and then the cost is low enough where it doesn't inhibit you from getting that next guy this year, next year, whatever, cool. If you start inhibiting getting that guy that really is going to put you over the top, then I'm a no.
So John, let me ask, cost being low for you is RJ and what picks?
The Wizards pick and then either like our pick this year or the Mavs pick, something like that.
Okay. Here's my thing for me, I still wouldn't do that trade, and here's why. What's more important, regular season or postseason?
Postseason.
Okay. Jrue Holiday has not shot well in the postseason at all. His effective field goal percentage is 47%. His true shooting percentage is 49%. Do you know what the Knicks' effective field goal and true shooting percentage was this past postseason?
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was 49% effective, 53% true shooting. The last thing I want to see on this team is another guy who's good on defense and does not show up offensively in the postseason. And to trade for a guy who's 33 years old, who, you know, awesome during the regular season, can play very well off Brunson during the regular season, I don't need to see another brick fest in the postseason from the New York Knicks. We need somebody who can actually make shots outside of Jalen Brunson, okay? We didn't get good shooting from Grimes. We didn't get good shooting from Quickly. Randle didn't show up either, and we already know what we get from the center position. We know Josh Hart as well, and now we don't know what Dante DiVincenzo will do in the postseason. As much as I like Jrue Holiday, to trade assets for a 33-year-old guy who isn't going to get any better, he's going to be on the decline soon, to then give up young guys who could potentially be in a better and bigger deal for a better player, I know it seems bleak right now, but we don't know what tomorrow holds. I just don't see why we're going to trade for a guy who I like the fit next to Brunson, but it's like at this point in time, it does not, like as CP said, the timeline doesn't make sense. I wouldn't do that for Jrue Holiday. For me, I'm just a no. I don't need a guy who is not going to show up in the postseason the way that we want him to, because we need more offense than we do defense. I know he fits what Tom Thibodeau likes, but I'm thinking about shooting, floor spacing, because we already saw the nightmare that we had against the Miami Heat. Don't need a repeat of that.
You're not trading away offensive floor spacing, though. You're not trading that away in that trade.
But you know what? RJ showed up, though. Like, if you're talking, I'm talking about, if we're talking about RJ, who he showed up for more of the games, I don't want to give up RJ for, I don't know how well he's going to be. I don't think he's going to be that all-star that everyone thinks he's going to be. But if he can be better, like just be more efficient, more timely with his decision-making and shot-making, I'll gladly take that than a guy who's just going to not show up like offensively that we need him to from the get-go. And at the guard position, when we're already, we have the, like, that's already, we're already stacked at the guard position. Like how many more guards do we need? Like even in that trade, trading RJ,
we need a wing
and Fournier, like he'd be playing the wing at that point. Cause he's 6'5" or maybe Grimes, but like, that's still, we're talking about an undersized team. And that's not really, to me, what we need. We need a true legitimate wing on this team. And I'd rather trade RJ for a guy who's legitimately 6'6" taller, who can shoot and give more offense. And that's just not Drew Holiday for me.
I agree with that, but I think you can make that trade later. Like, that is still a trade you have to make. I completely agree with you. I'm 100% on board with that, but I still think that is a trade you can make later. I don't have RJ's, you know, true shooting and effective field goal percentage in the postseason in front of me. I'm sure it's not that much different than what Holiday's was. I'm sure it's fairly similar.
Sure.
But look, I don't disagree with the timeline thing. I really don't. I just wonder if you're passing on an opportunity to improve the team in a trade that will not hurt you long term. Now, that's the question. Will that trade kill you long term?
It won't kill
them
long term.
I don't think it's going to.
No.
But again, if it's only, you have to understand that you can sign him for a couple more years. I would not do that trade if it's just a 1 year rental. That, I'm a no on that. So you would have to figure out a way to know that you're going to have him into the future after the move. If you can do that, then yes. But the 1 year rental, I agree. I would not trade the future assets for just a 1 year shot. I would not be on board for that.
But let's hear what the people have to say. Call us up, 657-383-1509, or hit us up on the Knicks Fan TV Discord. Jay from East New York. Jay, if you're on the Discord, go ahead and unmute your mic.
Fellas, can y'all hear me?
Loud and clear. Let's go.
We got you.
CP, shout out to CP. Shout out to Alex. Mr. Snoke, I'm hoping I'm saying your name right.
Yep.
You don't trade your 23-year-old for a 33-year-old on an expiring contract. You say it won't hurt us in the long term. Well, what happens if we re-sign a Drew Holiday to an extended contract and then he's more close to retirement than RJ is to his prime? Are we serious right now? Like, and I don't mean to come off as an RJ stan, but I just think that that's completely asinine. I've been on Twitter all day today. I'm at work. I'm kind of bored. And I've been seeing a lot of RJ for Drew Holiday, and it makes absolutely no sense. Another reason why it doesn't make sense, we just signed Dante DiVincenzo to $52 million. Quickly is up for an extension. We got Quentin Grimes. So in order for us to go after a Drew Holiday and to give up an RJ and picks, that's completely asinine. That's hustling backwards, man. I don't know if you understand that term, but that's just hustling backwards. You don't give up your 23. If that was the case, we should have went for Paul George. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we're really talking, like, if we're going to go for somebody, an older player at that, that wants to get more money going into the 34, 35 years of age in the league, you just don't make that move, man. It's crazy. RJ Barrett has more upside than Drew Holiday has potential of whatever he got left in the tank. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to you guys. I'm going to leave it at that, man.
All right. Jay from East New York. Rate that call in the chat. One being trash, five being facts. What do you guys think about Jay from East New York's call?
Yeah, and by the way, like, if I could trade that package for Paul George, I'd probably do that too, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I probably would.
Yeah.
With you, I mean, I agree. I think Paul George would be a better fit in that situation, but I don't think you're getting Paul George for that package, which is my point. And I know Jay's not an RJ stan, but for the ones out there, like, if you go out there and you offer RJ in a one-on-one package, like, you're not getting the unprotected first-round pick for him. Like, teams aren't giving you that for him. Like, his value around the league is not great. Like, it just isn't. Now, if he continues to get better, to Jay's point, and look, that's possible. His value is going to go up, and if you want to hold out for that, you certainly can. My issue is that we've seen zero improvement in the areas you want to see improvement in the last 2 years. I mean, he's shot worse, he's shot worse. So that's where my concern is with him. I'm not saying you want to sell low on him, but I think there's just assumption that guys, it's just, it's like NBA 2K or Madden, where the guys, you have a young guy in your roster, you create a player, and every year his, you know, point values just go up every year. That's not how it works. Like,
yeah.
That's just not how it works. So I get what he's saying, and I understand you're trading a young player for an older player. At some point, you do have to cash in these assets, and the time's coming sooner rather than later. You have a two-year window to make either two small trades or one whopper. And again, it's clock ticking.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Who agrees with John? If anybody in the chat agrees with John, call us up. Let's get to the phones. Hear what the people got to say, man. Area code 646-519. What's your name? Where are you calling in from?
Shout out to the boys with Orange and Blue. What up, CP? It's Hector from Harlem.
Hector from Harlem World. How you feeling, bro?
I'm feeling good, bro. Good show so far. I just actually wanted to tap in real quick and actually agree with John. I thought that he made some valid points.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought he made a lot of valid points. CP, actually, a couple months ago, we were talking about it. It feels like 2 years in the making, man. The problem I have is that we've been talking about for a while the need of a superstar in this city, and we have to go about it in, obviously, like, smart parameters, because obviously we know this city is so desperate and this team is so desperate for a superstar that we're willing, with its history, the way we've gone about transactionally in the past, has only pushed us back like how many steps backwards. So we know that Donovan is up for free agency next year. Thing that it kind of worries me is that I do like Jrue Holiday a lot. I personally think he's still, what, top six, seven two-way players in the NBA.
Sure.
I don't think that deal kills us. But at the same time, the point that the first caller made, if you're going to do a deal like that, he did have a valid point. You would rather go out and
get a wing
like Paul George. Yeah, it's true.
I agree with that.
I personally thought that Paul George was a way better fit for us. I thought that not just because of the obviousness of the fact that we need a wing, but it's like with this guard-heavy just lineup that we have now, it's kind of like, we're kind of like dwindling, and like you guys pointed out perfectly, that the clock is ticking. We better do something.
Absolutely.
And to your point, CP, time is ticking, man. Like, we're gonna have to cash in these unprotected picks and picks in the future, man. So I'm kind of in agreement with everybody right now. I'm not gonna lie to you, but keep doing your thing, bro. I'm watching.
Appreciate it, Hector from Harlem World. Appreciate it, man.
And again, I don't think this is an easy call, guys. I just want to stress that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If fans that don't want to do it, I totally get it. And no one has – CP, we've been doing these hits on my podcast back in the day, your podcast, for probably 5-6 years now. No one preached patience more than I did. I was on board for waiting for the right move, doing the right thing, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. But now that you got Brunson here, for me, it does change the formula a little bit, right? Because you're a little bit closer now.
Yeah.
So I do think that, for me, does speed up the timeline a little bit. I'm not saying they should not be desperate at all. Like, if you make that offer and they say, no, we want another unprotected first in, like, 28. Okay, bye-bye. See ya. Like, we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on the cost because, you know, there might be another team that's closer to a title that's more desperate than the Knicks to bring in a guy like Holiday, and they might get more.
Yeah.
That's more valuable to Portland. So that might not even – for Knicks fans that don't want to do that, that might not even be enough.
But that might not even get you there.
On one other team's come in and offer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That might not even get you there, man, because there's a number of teams that could use them. I mean, I look at the Warriors, obviously Miami. Does Miami end up getting Portland close to a deal with a hero and some of their picks that they were going to, you know, try to pony up for Dame?
How about Dallas?
Dallas. I think Dallas could work.
Mm.
You know, I talked about the Celtics.
So many teams. Jrue Holiday is just a perfect fit on so many teams.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody like, how come no one made a how come Jrue Holiday is now getting all this like attention? It's like, well, on Milwaukee, they're going to keep him up. They weren't looking to trade him. But now that he's gotten moved, he can fit on so many different teams. Like, that's why we're having
Lakers,
about the Knicks. Like, it's legit. He could legit fit next to Brunson very well. Like, we talk about it's very, very, very good fit. I feel like someone's just going to come in over the top because of that. They're just that much closer. And CP, we talked about the Celtics on the NBA report. I could see them going all in because they got to do something. I could see the Clippers even just saying, you know what, forget Harden. Jrue makes much more sense to us. Better teammate. Not less of a problem.
It's a much safer
pick. Going that direction,
much safer
too.
Well, dude, how about the Sixers package, Tobias Harris, and a couple of ones to try to keep Embiid in Philadelphia?
Fair. That's fair. But again, that's another reason why I'm like, you know, we can't throw our pennies in the Embiid well, because we've just seen it. So with Spider Mitchell, everybody, oh, Knicks. Oh, it's the Cavs. Bradley Beal, Miami. Well, Phoenix Suns. And now you have Dame. It's Miami. But except for Bradley Beal, that was a special case. When you don't have leverage, you can go anywhere. And when if and when Embiid becomes available, you don't know when that is going to be. I mean, I could look at so many teams that would have a better package of young talent and picks. Look at OKC. When will Presti put his chips in the middle? They have so much depth and talent on their roster and draft picks to give up. Will the Rockets do something like that? With the Magic, I mean, the Pacers. There's so many teams that you're going to have to compete with that, you know, this slam dunk that just because, you know, he and Leon have this relationship that that Morey's just going to push him over here up the turnpike. I don't see it, man.
I've been saying the same way. I don't think Morey ever trades Embiid to the Knicks. Mm. I just don't think that's something he would do unless the Knicks completely came over the top on any other team's offer. And I just don't know that that's ever going to be the case. Embiid's just too good.
Right.
And again, I think there are red flags on Embiid also, to be quite honest with you. So I don't know who the next – that's the thing. We never know who the next guy is.
Yeah.
Maybe things crash and burn in Phoenix and Devin Booker becomes available. Right. That's possible.
Right.
You know, maybe Kyrie does something really dumb in Dallas and Luca's like, dude, I just can't deal with this guy.
Yeah, I see, that's the last one. I was telling Evan Roberts at FAM this.
Luka's my dark horse, man.
I think with the bad blood from the KP trade, the Brunson tampering, and with Dallas, you know, tanking our pick last year, I think there's bad blood, man. I'm just throwing it out there.
That's the thing. I'm not sure Dallas will trade him to the Knicks. I don't know if he would, to be honest with you. I'm with you on that.
After Julius and the CAA Mafia showed up at the playoff game courtside between Brunson and Spider, I don't know, man. I think they insulted him a little bit. But if I could, you know, take a Goodfellas line there, that's a tough one.
Everyone's got a price, CP. Remember that.
Everyone's got a price. That's a New York tax. You can bet that.
That's right.
For Luka Doncic, man. So, interesting indeed. All right.
So Devin Booker it is.
Yeah. So Book it is. All right. Next call, 646-496. What's your name? Where are you calling in from?
Yo, CP, what's going on, bro? This is TJ from Harlem, a.k.a. King Kong Bing Bong.
Haven't
spoken to you guys in a while.
CP, how you doing?
Last time I talked, what's going on? Last time I talked to you, we was over at 4040.
Yep.
And I'm chopping it up there. That was a good time there, man.
Absolutely, man. And stay tuned. We're working on finalizing the next venue for the watch parties. And the first one is going to be for the opening night kickoff between the Knicks and the Celtics.
Nice.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned for the venue, man. We're working on it. Working hard at it.
That's what's up. All right, so let me jump in here real quick. So right off the bat, I'm not going to sit here and allow any more slander on RJ Barrett. This has to stop.
Let's go.
This has to stop. Let me explain to you why. The kid is 22, turning 23, or did he turn 23? He's 23 years old, and some players, and this is in the form of RJ, take a little bit longer to develop. I believe he hasn't been unlocked yet simply because of the coach being Tom Thibodeau. That's it. I'm not saying Tom Thibodeau is the wrong coach or the right coach or a bad coach or a good coach. What I am saying is that he hasn't been able to unlock R.J. Barrett, because if you put him on, you will give R.J. to Steve Kerr or to Ty Lue or even to Eric Spoelstra, then I feel like they're going to see something there that and use him in a different space. So instead of everybody wants to get rid of I don't understand the logic behind that. It's mind-boggling. You don't get rid of RJ for that, bro. And like the other caller said, you don't get rid of a 22, 23-year-old for a 33-year-old. Now, mind you, does Drew Holiday fix the issue with us right now? Yeah, he does, but that's with RJ on the court, right? If you think about it, if you was able to make a trade, I don't know what you would do. You would probably have to give up Grimes, and no, but the money wouldn't work with their neither.
Nah,
so
it's either
RJ and Julius.
RJ and Julius. Yeah, good.
Right. So I understand what he's saying. There is no other player there. And so with that being said, that's why you don't do it. And last point, the Knicks have been making the best trades have been not making the wrong trades, right? So, and we have four, we have potential to the end of the season to be lined up for four first-round picks. I get it. But the same way Drew Holiday became available, you don't know who's going to come available. So you don't jump on a trade like that for a 33-year-old. Because,
okay,
like you said, we need a win. We need a
win. We do. And appreciate the call, man. Appreciate the call.
Tom Thibodeau holding back RJ.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that. RJ's got to unlock RJ. You know, I don't think
Thibodeau's holding
that. He's got
to hit shots, dude.
Yeah,
hit shots. Look, that's the thing. Talking about RJ development, being held back, different system. The dude just needs to hit shots. All right,
yeah.
He doesn't need to hit shots off the dribble. He doesn't need to hit step backs from 17 feet yet. Just hit wide open catch and shoot shots. Mm-hmm. Like, if he does that, he becomes a viable off the ball player. Which is what with Randall and Brunson, you need him to be.
You need him to be that.
Be a little bit better on defense. Then, you know what? I'm on board. The problem is that we've seen zero progress in that area. He's become worse defensively. And those are the two areas we need him to get better at for him to
critical position.
What we need him to be. Because to me, this is my thing with RJ. I don't want to make this an RJ show. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't have the quickness and explosion to be an effective half-court offensive dribble player. He just doesn't.
Yeah.
He can't get around people, and he can't elevate and explode to the rim to finish at a high rate. It's just that's what he is as an athlete. That's not going to change. So he's going to have to become an almost elite shooter, so teams have to respect his jumper, which will open up his drive a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just haven't seen enough to make me believe that's going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. There's a good chance I'm going to be wrong, but I just haven't seen enough yet where he's ever shown me that he's going to become that low of a shooter, and that's where I'll leave it.
JJ from Brooklyn says, I love this guy, John. You're speaking his language. JJ has been known to be an RJ detractor on the show. He has a reputation for that. So you're speaking his language. Shout out to JJ from Brooklyn, man. But I do agree with you on those RJ points. He's got to unlock himself. I don't think Tibbs is holding him back. I mean, look, the lineup is what it is right now. Tibbs has tried to stagger the lineups. He gave RJ the second unit, let him run with that. I don't think he was effective in that role last year. I thought he should have been better. Playoffs, he came through. He came through for most of the games. I would say after, you know, game two of the Cavs series up until game five of the Heat series, I thought he was pretty good in the playoffs.
He was
much
better.
So we'll have to wait and see there. We'll have to wait and see. All right, let me get to 732. 732 Erico. What's your name? Where are you calling in from? There he is. How are you feeling, man? Dan from New Jersey. Let's go.
I hope you guys are feeling wonderful on this beautiful Thursday night, gentlemen.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask you one question. What have we become? We're talking about trading Drew Holiday, 33-year-old Drew Holiday, not 2011 Sixers Drew Holiday.
Yeah.
Broken down, battered, beaten up, probably won't be better than Josh Hart in 3 years, Drew Holiday. Gentlemen, I need us to be serious for a second. The Knicks do not have an open championship window. The Knicks are not going to win a championship within the next 2 to 3 years, so far as we know. If we get Drew Holiday, we are not going to be able to use him for a run to the finals. If we assume that, we're assuming Embiid is going to be available within the next month. That is not going to happen.
Okay. All right.
I don't want to trade for Drew Holiday for running at the second round, dude.
Four straight tomato emojis, man. I don't think the chat's feeling this call right now, Dan.
It's all good. I know what's up, man. You don't get Drew Holiday unless you're going to go get the chip.
Okay.
He's got 1 or 2 years left in him, man. That's it.
He might be right about that. That's possible.
All right, Dan from New Jersey, man. Appreciate the call, bro.
But again, I think there's an idea that you can turn RJ into, you know, Luka Doncic, and that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real for a second. Again, I'm not saying trade quickly and Grimes and, you know, all these other guys and all your future picks. This is an incremental step. The same way getting Brunson was an incremental step. Granted, Brunson was a lot younger. Clearly, he has a much longer, you know, runway here, but it's an incremental step. It's not the final step, CP, to your point. I understand wanting him to be the final step at this age, and I don't disagree. I think that's a really good point. But, again, I just wonder if you're ever going to get better value. Like, would you rather, let me put it this way, mm-hmm. next year, would you rather even have Drew Holiday at 34 or whomever you draft with the Mavericks pick and R.J. Barrett?
Yeah. This is similar to the Josh Hart situation.
Right.
You know.
So that's all I'm saying. And, no, are the Knicks in a championship window right now with their roster? They're not. But I think Drew Holiday brings them one step closer.
Salute to everybody in the chat. Once again, hit that like button, hit the share button, subscribe to the channel. Another edition of Knicks Fan TV Live. CP the Franchise, Alex Rotaro's here. Special guest, John Smelk, who covers the New York Giants for Giants.com and for WFAN. Giants will be kicking off at the Meadowlands against the Seattle Seahawks on Monday. And we'll talk about our football misery later on in the show. Right now, we're going to keep it positive on the Knicks, man. Keep it positive. But shout out to some of the franchise channel members in the chat, man. I see Rick Pennington. Shout out to Nick. D-Block 1755. How are you feeling? Shout out Philip. State of New York Knicks podcast in here. Shout out to State. Dave from East New York. Ignacio Lobregat, always in here. Euro De Niro. JJ. Ari's in here. Shout out to TM. Okay, so we got everybody in here, man. This is a packed show tonight, man.
It is lively.
I bring fans, CP.
There
what can
we go.
I tell you?
Absolutely. 1,200 on the check-in. So we're getting the buzz back, Al. You know, we're starting to get the regulars back. Basketball.
That's
is
how
on
you
the
know
way,
Knicks basketball is around the corner. Yeah. But I, like, John, I'm actually going to push back. I feel like if we get someone like Drew Holiday, it's just doing the same thing like with Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart, which at this point, I think we're kind of capping out at how much those guys can actually bring to the table. You say 55, sure, I'll give you the 55 regular season wins, but do you actually think getting someone like Drew Holiday puts you that much closer to getting to the Eastern Conference Finals? Because that's kind of the next step. If you're making that type of trade for Drew Holiday, that's kind of what I'm expecting for the next step. So do you think they go to the ECF?
I think they have a much better chance, to be honest with you. I mean, I think if you put Drew Holiday on their roster last year, I think they have a pretty darn good chance of beating Miami. I think they have a much better shot at it. Look, it doesn't, does it push them into 60 win territory? No, it doesn't. It doesn't put them into elite NBA team territory, but I think it does make them better. I think it does make them significantly better. I don't want, you know, he was nearly an all and exact low voted him on his all NBA team last year, Drew Holiday. Like, let's not bag 33 year old.
He's not
Drew
broken
Holiday.
Down. I mean, he's played 67 games each of the last 2 years.
He was
great. All star.
He's a really good player. Now, playoff performance, Alex, you're 1,000% right. It was a problem.
Yeah.
But the good thing about this Knicks team, and again, maybe you don't want to rely on Julius either, he would be your third offensive option when you get to the postseason, all right?
Who, so, Drew or Julius?
I think it depends on the game, right? But I think in theory, Julius is a better half-court offensive creator than Drew Holiday is in a vacuum,
sure,
right? I think
sure.
in a random game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So – and I do think if you, like, leave Holiday open, he's going to hit shots. I wonder about his shot creation ability in the postseason when defenses get tuned up a little bit? Yeah, I think that's fair. And, look, I get your point. And I've always been in favor of not making the next trade until it's one that will make you a contender. But that was in the context of it costing you assets that's going to stop the next move. The whole basis of my point is that you can still make the next move the same way you can make it before this trade. Like, it's not going to matter. Like, not having the Wizards pick and, like, the Mavs pick in 24 is not going to move the dial in terms of you not being able to land the next guy, at least in my opinion. That's why I would be willing to consider this. If it does, if the Knicks front office makes the calculation that, look, if we make this deal, we can't make the next one, then I'm out. I'm out. I don't want to do it. I'm out. But in my opinion, I think you could do both. To Winhurst's point on the clip you paid in the podcast.
Guys, remember that this show is also presented by Manscaped, man. Go to manscaped.com and use promo code KFTV for 20% off plus free shipping. Shout out to our guys at Manscaped. Al, did you get your delivery yet? They have sent something in the mail for us. Did you get yours?
That would explain why I got the phone notification from FedEx. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'll be waiting. Yeah, I'll be waiting.
I got them on it, man. The handyman is on the way, man.
Yeah.
The handyman's on the way. The R&D team has reached out. They got a new lawnmower coming out. I'm very, very excited to try that one out. As usual, no testimonials, but, you know, once it gets here, man, you know, it'll get here. No testimonials, though.
Van Gundy season, bro.
Van Gundy season. It's getting a little nippy out. So we're going
from Jordan.
We have
to get
Jordan.
Van Gundy on Knicks games, by the way. We got to get Van Gundy on the Knicks games.
Yes, absolutely. That is a must, man. That is a must. JVG must be heard during this NBA season come hella high water. I'm going to see if we can sign him. J. Cal's in the chat. I got J. Cal in here. J. Cal, let me know what's going on. We got to negotiate, get Van Gundy to the table. We might have to sign him, man. We can't have him just out there like that, man. You know? So, all right, so that's the holiday stuff. Real quick, obviously training camp starting up next week. Let's just go rapid fire and talk about, you know, some of the Knicks core players and what's one thing, one big question mark, or one big improvement or one big focus area that you're looking forward to with said player, John. So let's start with Quentin Grimes. What are you most looking forward to in terms of Grimes going into now year three? One of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. What are you looking forward to in this new season for Grimes?
He's one of the guys I'm most excited about because I think he has more to give, to be honest with you. Movement shooting, catching balls off screens, kind of like the old J.J. Redick stuff, right? Catching Starks running around screens, catching on the move and shooting. And I think he's got some pick and roll in him. I think his handle has to get better a little bit to run more of that pick and roll stuff. But I like his passing on the move, going to the basket. I think he makes some nice drop passes. Maybe he gets a little alley-oop stuff to Mitch into his bag. But I think Grimes can really develop into more of a creator and less of just a stand around and wait for a shot type of guy. I'm a big Grimes fan, so I'm very excited for him. I think he has a chance to really step his game up this year.
Al, how about you?
I'm looking for him for shooting off the dribble. That's what I want to see. I want to see more mid-range shooting. I want to see him just get a little bit more – I want to see him attack more on offense. You know, we just saw him as a 3-and-D guy last year. I agree with John. I think there's much more left in the tank. I think he has another gear to him. I want to see him being that guy next to Brunson in that starting rotation that, okay, Brunson, Julius, let's go to Grimes right now. Let's see if he can go get a shot for us, whether it be a mid-range, off the dribble, shooting, as John said, off movement, off screen for a three. That's the type of stuff I want to see from Grimes this year. And be a playmaker, man. We saw a little bit with just finding centers on the dunker spot. So I want to see him do a little bit more of that as well.
Yeah, he had that chemistry with Mitch, that little dump down pass when he would attack the closeouts. And I thought that was interesting. For me, I think it's a bit of both. I think both of the points that you guys made, shooting off of movement for sure. And just, is this year three, does it all come together for Grimes, right? That's what they say. For rookies, for young players, year three, year four, things start to slow down. They start to be a bit more connected. It's very difficult to be a effective, impactful two-way player in the league. I mean, look at his matchups every night, the guys that he's got to chase down. Then on the other end, you still got to have your legs, your endurance to make shots. So I'm hoping offensively that he catches up. His role in the offense is very interesting because he's in the starting lineup that has three very high usage players, guys that really command the ball. So I'm interested to see, you know, will they get him involved more? And when they do, he's got to knock down those shots, man. Only shot 27% from three in the postseason. They needed that to pick up a bit. Both he and Quickly really struggled shooting. And to me, that's really got to pick up. But like you guys, I feel like there's some untapped playmaking potential there. And we talked about this with Fred Katz last season during the midseason report. We talked about Grimes's quick decision making, his ability to really make a quick pass and keep defenses in rotation. And in Thibodeau's system, in that read and react style offense, you need guys like that, quick thinkers, high IQ players, guys that are going to make the right reads and the right play. And I really like that with Grimes. And I do think, as you guys said, that there is an extra layer, an extra level of playmaking that he has in the bag. So let's see if this is the year that he kind of puts it together and takes another step, especially on the offensive side of things. So very much looking forward to seeing what Grimes' offseason work with J.J. Redick. He's working with Penny. He's all over the map this offseason. So hopefully it translates into good things. How about Josh Hart, John? You know, Hart coming in. I saw Josh Hart yesterday. I was at an event at Rucker Park. He and my guy Anthony MSG went head-to-head in a game of horse. That was pretty interesting. But for Hart, he's going to be your de facto backup power forward. So what do you think about that? New contract and sort of a new role full-time for him.
Believe in yourself. You know, and you get a lot of fans who are like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, of course he believes in himself. Dude, he does not have faith that he's going to hit the open three. You know, we saw in the playoffs after shooting like 60% in the regular season, whatever ungodly number he was at. Then all of a sudden the playoffs come, he doesn't want to shoot after he misses a couple. Shoot the ball, dude. Like, even if you just make 38% of them, it's good enough. Just take the open three when you get it. Don't feel like you have to dribble drive all the time. You know, be more confident in that spot up three. And then just keep doing what you're doing. Defend, hustle for rebounds, move the ball. And if he just, I think, is more willing to take that open three and is a little bit more confident in himself and doing it, I think Josh Hart is one of the – it's funny. I've never been more confident in a Knicks team and feel more, you know, better about what they're going to be. And part of the reason is that I think a guy like Josh Hart, you know what he's bringing every night. So just shoot the three when you have it, man, and have confidence in your shot.
Yeah, I agree with John. I think it's just a three-point shooting at this point. Like, honestly, I really don't even expect that much of three-point shooting to be that much better. Just shoot the open shot, as John's saying. But he's just kind of a guy that's already established he is who he is at this point. There's not much more I'm expecting out of Josh Hart. He has that solidified role in this league where he just brings that defensive tenacity. He's a free safety on defense. He can just find the ball and just grab it out of the air and just change, like, just attack on offense, right? One man, band man in transition. There's not really much else that this guy needs to do. Like, I'm not expecting him to be a guy who's going to create offense for himself. He just is who he is at this point. So, to John's point, just knock down the open shot.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Yeah, same for me, because I think the other aspects of the game, he's consistent at that, right? Whether it's getting boards, getting the team out in transition, very important things, especially for this Knicks team and for their offense to flow. He's got to continue to do that. And so for me, just like you guys, it's can he just knock down the three at a decent clip, right? It's not going to be at the 60% that he came in with, because that was insane. But in the playoffs, it was woeful. And John, like you said, it just seemed like as the games kept going, he lost more and more confidence in his shot, where he didn't even want to take the shot. So that played right into Spoelstra's hands. They had no interest in him on the perimeter, and he was in the starting lineup. Things kind of were a little bit sketchy in that regard. So for me, it's just knocking it down at a decent clip. I am curious to see him at the backup four. How does he look when they're playing against bigger teams? How does he match up? You know, how does he match up against Bobby Portis? Or when they play the Celtics, you know, they're going to play the Celtics quite a bit. How does he match up there? But, you know, from a small ball standpoint, there could be some advantages there as well. So Tibbs, from the minute he got here, I think it was after the first game, Tibbs was like, yeah, well, he can play some four. So this has been on Tibbs' mind for quite some time now, right? We've been waiting for Tibbs to go small. Now we're going to have the opportunity here with Josh Hart at the four. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he plays.
That's going to be a night-to-night like decision to play him at the four, because you mentioned some like Bobby Portis. You play him against a traditional four, I don't see that necessarily working out too well, just because height. I'm like Bobby Portis, that's a legit four. Like, that's not something that Josh Hart can go in there and start moving off the block. So it'll be interesting to see how Tibbs utilizes a small ball rotation.
Yeah, there are many of those guys, though. That's a good thing, right? Like, those guys don't really exist anymore, which is good.
Yeah, true indeed. How about Emmanuel Quickley? Second runner-up, or first runner-up, I guess you could say, in the Sixth Man of the Year sweepstakes. Going to be looking for a new bag. Going to be playing for a new deal. What are you looking forward to from Quick next year?
Understand what a good shot is. You know, I think sometimes he makes pre-decisions where he's like, I want to shoot this time. And even if it's a bad, like, step back 25-foot three, guess what? It's going up.
Yeah.
And other times I think he gets kickouts and he passes up threes and then tries to drive when maybe the three-point shot is there. I think just decision-making for stop and shoot, you know, he's never going to be a guy, I don't think, that has the quickness to just take guys off the dribble and get to the hoop. But, you know, I just think, you know, be a better decision-maker in terms of what shots you take. Because I think if he takes better shots, his percentages are going to improve. I think maybe that first season when he hit so many of those tough threes, that was maybe a little bit of an aberration. And it was one of those small sample size things that he's not going to be able to repeat.
Yeah.
Not to say he's not going to get there again, but I think just take the good shots. Like, they don't need him to be a difficult shot shooter, but they need him to take the shots that are available and make them.
Yeah.
And he's a good defender already. I think he improved his passing last year. I think he's a savvy pick and roll guy. You know, I think sometimes he might rely a little bit on drawing the foul on some of those pick and rolls instead of being able to finish. So I think that maybe, especially, I think we saw that in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back, you watch those first couple of playoff games, they were against the Heat specifically, but the Cavs even too. Like, there were plays where he did his little, you know, get into the lane and try to back up into the guy and draw the foul. And, like, he wasn't getting the calls.
They weren't getting
like,
it to him.
He's like, I was getting those during the regular season, guys. Yeah. What's up? And they're like, no, this is the playoffs. We don't give, you know, those nonsense fouls anymore. And I think that was one of the things that messed with his head in the playoffs, where he didn't know where he could get his fouls like he did in the regular season, where he was so good at getting at the line. So I think just understanding when to take your jump shot, what's a good shot, and then finishing a little bit better on those pick and rolls instead of relying so much on drawing fouls. Those would be my two spots for him.
Free throw shooting has to get back to where it was. I didn't like that he took a dip in his free throw shooting. Playmaking, honestly, I want to see him to be a better decision maker. I mean, John, you talk about shot selection. It's also that also goes towards his decision on when to pass and find the right teammate, right? And, you know, I know people at the beginning of last season is like, how come he's not finding Cam Reddish? And it's like, you know, even throughout some parts of the regular season after Cam was gone. You still got to figure out where to find your teammates and get them open. Even when Obi, like, that's his boy, like, on the team. There were times Obi was open a week out and he didn't find him. So I want to see better playmaking from him. But I also agree with your like, the shot selection's got to be better. And just become more of a well-rounded three-level scorer, because I think we see that in him. He took more mid-range jumpers last year, and he was successful. He's better at, you know, attacking the lane and finishing through contact, did a little bit better at that. I like to see him just become more proficient in that, be a true three-level scorer. But really, for me, it's the playmaking at this point. I think as a sixth man, you know, obviously you're supposed to be instant offense off the bench. Being the stud that he is on defense is been a pleasant surprise. But if he can really get that playmaking down, then we're talking about not only him leading that second unit, but then when Tibbs leaves him in there with Jalen Brunson, right? Because that's what we also need. We need another ball handler out there. And we saw a lot of that in the playoffs with Brunson, where it was just Brunson and only him alone that was bringing up the ball and that we could rely on. That's where you need Quickly to be a better playmaker and distributor, because once you can rely on Quickly to be that off-ball guard to make those decisions, then things open up that offense and be a little bit more easier in the playoffs. So really it comes down to playmaking for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for Quick, for me, it's, you know, like you said, John, it's just shot selection, just being a little bit caught in between, you know, what's a good shot, what's not a good shot, when to shoot, when to pass. Also his playoff performance, you know, how will he bounce back from that? The Cavs really seem to have shut him down. And then as he got into the Heat series, he ultimately caught the ankle injury and was really, it was a lackluster playoff for him and really kind of a tale of two seasons, where the regular season, he was really on top of his game. And then the playoffs, he was nowhere to be found. So I want to see, you know, if they are fortunate to make the playoffs again, the third time around for Quickly, what's that adjustment that he makes to really getting adjusted to playoff style defenses? I mean, you went up against the Cavs and the Heat, two of the best defenses, not just in the East, but in the league. And it was really a tough go for him. Also, is there a bit of adversity for Quickly this year? Because with DiVincenzo being added in here, Quickly's been Mr. Fourth Quarter. He was Mr. Fourth Quarter last year. He was a guy that Tibbs' trust. He had earned Tibbs' trust. Now you add DiVincenzo in here. You have another full year of Josh Hart. If Grimes takes another step, we talk about this fourth quarter crunch time lineup all the time. It's Quickly so much of a sure shot to get those minutes that's not necessarily guaranteed. And so, you know, being in that contract year and the minutes, where will those crunch time minutes come from? I wonder how that impacts him, at least mentally, in terms of how he, you know, gets through the season.
Yeah, and one of us should say this too, pay the man. I mean, pay the man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, give him his 4-year, $100 million contract, whatever it ends up being. He deserves it. Get another guy on a reasonable salary as the cap keeps going up, a young player that you can aggregate in the trade later on if the right move comes along. Not that I'm looking to get it off of Quickly. I think he's a really helpful, good player. But, yeah, I mean, I just pay him. And I think they will, CP. That's my feel. I think they're going to get some
before
the season starts.
I think they will. How about RJ? Well, we definitely got into the RJ topic already.
Yeah.
So
look, I'll be real quick.
Yeah.
Just show me you can shoot and defend consistently. You know, RJ for 3 weeks at a time can look like the player that the fans think he's going to become. And we see that for sometimes a month.
Yeah.
Month and a half even. You get these periods of play where you're like, man, this is it. He's turned the corner. This is RJ. We thought it in the playoffs. Then he goes 1-for-10 in the deciding game. And that's just kind of been where he's been. He's such a streaky player from month to month and you know, week to week, where he just needs to be a more consistent shooter. And it comes to me down to shooting.
Yeah.
Like, he has to shoot better, and then he has to defend more consistently. And if those two things come, then I see him as part of a championship puzzle down the road. So I think I've said enough about RJ, but that's where I'm at with him. Consistency, shooting, defense, that's it.
Consistency is the big thing.
Yep.
Like, you knocked on the head, John. And as we'll be, CP, we discussed this entire time this offseason. It's like, look, that's why we even have the FIBA conversations like, oh, look, he put up 30-some-odd. I'm like, yeah, we've seen him score 30-some-odd this exact manner, this same way. It's not any different. Show me a jumper. Show me a mid-range jumper. Show me that you can be a consistent knockdown three-point shooter. Like, that's all I want to see, because there are times where he's wide open and he bricks it. But it's like, for him, he's got to be able to hit at all these levels. Like, he's not going to be that guy who's going to be step back, mid-range jumper, and that fluid. I mean, in order for him to get to that next level that some fans thinks that he can attain, he will have to develop a game like that, because, as John pointed out earlier, he doesn't have the explosiveness. He doesn't have that quickness. So he's got to be a little bit more creative in that aspect. And I haven't seen anything like that, but if he could just be consistent in making the right reads and knowing when to attack the basket, not have the blinders on, and just try to attack through three defenders in the paint and find the open guy out in the perimeter, those are things that – simple things like that. But I think playmaking, for me, is the big thing. Like, we saw some of that in the playoffs. Like, when he was on that hot streak, it's because he was playmaking. He would drive, find the open man, kick it out. I want to see more stuff like that. I feel like we didn't really get to see more of the Gotham Mob between him and Mitch. I'd like to see more of that come back. So playmaking, it comes back down to for RJ as well.
Yeah, I'm with playmaking, because I feel like of the two, between that and, you know, shooting off the dribble or just being more efficient shooting, I think the playmaking is the one that he can instantly improve upon and probably be a bit more consistent at. Just make a better decision on your drives and not trying to slam it on three guys in the paint. Kick it out. There's a guy open. You know, slow it down, kick it out, reverse the ball, find your open three-point shooters. And I think that's what we saw from him in the playoffs, especially in the Heat series, that I was very encouraged with, is that he maintained his aggressiveness, but it wasn't a zero-sum game to the rim. You know,
I want to throw this out there. Yeah. I don't think enough people have talked about this, CP. I think the reason we saw the improvement in the playoffs was based on how the Cavs and the Heat were guarding the Knicks, right? They really didn't ask RJ to be the point of attack creator and the engine of the offense much in those two series. Most of his drives came off of swing passes where he's on the weak side. Then he attacked a generally open area in front of him.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going against a set pick and roll defense where the defense is set in the lane, where, to Al's your point, he can get the blinders on, right? And his vision goes away and he forces it in the paint. I think he was just operating in much more space in that series because he was getting the ball off of rotations and the defense wasn't set in front of him. So if he can carry that forward here and do that more when he is asked, to your point earlier, CP, to be the engine with the second team, that would be huge. So I'm with you. I do think that is, to both of your points, that is a more realistic area where he can improve. And if he can do that, I think that's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah. And then other than that, it's try to hit the shots as best you can, right? I mean, we're looking for consistency here, man. I don't know if we're going to get it. It's roller coaster swings with him, the slow starts, then the hot month, and then he's back to cold and he's hot again. You know, just try to find some sort of middle ground. Just try
to get above 35%.
Get
me above 35% from three for the season. Can you do that? I'm not asking for 40. I'm not asking for 38. Just get me the 35.5.
But he came close to 40 his rookie year.
And that was the COVID year, right?
That was the COVID year. I guess all that was empty gym between Julius and him.
It must have been, right?
It must have been, because those two were clicking like Stockton and Malone, and then all of a sudden it kind of just fell off the cliff for us.
That right corner, baby. Right corner three.
Right corner, man. So
bring it back.
Yeah. So
with that and the snake dribble. Where was it? Where's the snake dribble? That went too, because he was doing all that during bubble year. But I will say, to give him something, He did get to the line more this season and knocked down a lot more free throws.
He did. Yep. He did.
Okay, I'm going to give him that.
Absolutely. How about Julius?
Don't turn into a pumpkin. I'm higher on Julius than most other people. I think he was really good last year. He played on a bad ankle in the playoffs against literally the two best defensive power forwards in the entire league and two of the best defenses in the league. So that's not me giving him a pass, but it's a reason. And I think I think they're both legitimate reasons as to why he didn't play as well as they needed him to play. And his, you know, failures was a big reason the Knicks couldn't beat the Heat in that series. If he was better, they could have beaten Miami. They really could have, and he wasn't good enough. But there is still that thing in the back of my head where, and I said this when I was on with Macri a couple of weeks ago on Knicks Film School, we still don't really know what happened 2 years ago, do we? Like, why was he terrible 2 years ago?
Yeah.
We know?
Yeah.
Like, what happened? Like, we don't have an explanation for that. So is there still a little worm in the back of my head that says, is there a chance that could happen again? Like, just don't let that happen, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Just be, if he's exactly the guy he was last year, I'm cool. And I understand fans want him to, you know, be the, you know, rotate on defense better and hustle back on defense.
I
just don't think that's going to change.
It's not.
I'll be honest with you. I think that's just, I have that kind of just plugged into what he is as a player. If he was a great defensive player and he played the way he was offensively, he'd be a, you know, second team All-NBA guy every year. That's just not what he is. That's why he's only making $27 million, and he's not making $45 million. So that's baked in for me. But if he just shows up and is the guy he was last year, you know, maybe don't, you know, do some of the mercurial things that annoy fans as much. Cool. But, like, I'm cool with Julius. You know, just don't revert and get into a bad way and get in your own head and turn into the 2021 version of Julius Randle, and I think I'll be happy.
So I shouldn't ask to see better defense. That was
Julius. Nah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, you can ask. You're not going to get it, but you can ask.
Okay. the only thing is, like, just show up in the playoffs. Like,
no,
that's
100%.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's it. Because at this point, we've seen during the regular season, you can be there. We know you can get yours. Strong rebounder, solid scorer. I would like to see him move more better off ball, personally. I
Good
feel
one.
Like that would help
this offense
gel even more, like, cut. Like, there's games where he would cut down the middle of the lane. I'm like, wow, that's different. I haven't seen you do that before. Mm-hmm. But, like, stuff like that would just help open up this offense. And I feel like him, because there was he had a good stretch from December to March where he was a solid playmaker. And then after that Celtics double OT game, he went from being a solid playmaker. And we didn't see that return. And just being a consistent guy who can find his open teammates and just move off ball. Those are the two biggest things for me, because I feel like if you do that, and CP, you talk about the read and react that Tom Thibodeau wants to implement. Well, it needs those two things. It needs a guy who just knows when to pass up the ball and find an open teammate and not necessarily try to force the issue just because he's the number two guy. Sometimes the number two guy has to know how to make his teammates better when they're open and they're hot. But it's also moving off ball to keep defense honest, because if he's doing something like just James Harden, like, I'm going to wait on the wing and just once you get me the ball, then I can start going. Well, the defense already, it's just so predictable at that point, and the defenses have to shift, you know.
Yeah.
His guy can stay right there. So I want to see those two things and then just show up in the playoffs, man. Because honestly, at this point for me, it's like, if he has a good regular season, it's like, okay, we know you can do this. That's not news.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not worried about him in the regular season. I think he'll be there. Especially with Brunson here, taking that pressure off of him. I think he'll be there. It's just the postseason. You know, how will he react? Will he have the physical endurance and stamina to perform in the playoffs? He had the ankle injury last year. And, you know, getting to that point, man, getting to the playoffs and playing well there, it's not easy. You got to go through the 82-game slog. You got to get there healthy mentally and physically. So that's for me. Just get me to April and let me see how he plays there, because that's when he's truly going to be tested. His decision-making, it's a decision-making, you know, against tougher defenses. And John hit it. You have to go up against Evan Mobley in the first round, Bam in the second round. It's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And everybody
by the way,
keyed
I
in
actually
on you.
Thought,
yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, and you know, your supporting cast is keying in on him. The decision-making is going to be tested. He's going to be tested there. Is he going to settle for just those long twos that a lot of teams like to hold him to, or is he going to be able to make quick decisions and make plays for the team?
Now, I'll be honest with you. I did not have a huge problem with his decision-making against Miami. You know, I think when that first game he came back in game two at the Garden when they won, he single-handedly played Miami out of their zone. And if you noticed, when he was in the game, Miami did not play zone against the Knicks for the rest of that series. And they did when he was off the floor, because when he was – they played zone against him, he would, you know, go into the wing against one of their – it was like Duncan Robinson, I think, that was playing one of their wings on the 2-3 zone. And he would just back him in, and he actually would make the right play in that game. But it was just – his shooting was just awful. And, look, I know I said it's baked in. That doesn't mean it's excusable to not run back on defense after a bad play. Like just can you run hard? Like, and I get why that drives Nick Fans nuts, because just run back hard. Dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's not asking.
But I think the frustrating thing is like, it doesn't seem like – it just seems like this is who he is.
Yeah,
right. Like, I mean, it just seems like this is just what you have. And so that's where things get frustrating.
But it's also like the awareness. Let's be aware of what we're in right now. We're talking about second round of the playoffs, and you're playing against a team that's taking it to you. Like, they're beating you at your own game and better because they're shooting the three ball well. It's like, you got to hustle. And if you're the number two guy, you know, you also set the tone and the example for the rest of the team. They're looking at you. So there's a little bit more responsibility in Julius's court, which is why he has to show up in a big way.
No, fair. 100% fair.
And last but not least, the floor general, Jalen Brunson, man. What are you thinking there, John?
Just be yourself, man. Like, he's awesome. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I didn't want to, you know, so many Knicks fans were worried about bringing in Brunson last offseason for a lot of the same reasons. They were anti, you know, Holiday. And besides the age factor, they just thought it was an incremental move. He doesn't move the needle and all that stuff. And, Jalen Brunson's a top 30 NBA player, right? Top 25 NBA player, wherever you want to put him in that hierarchy. He's right there. He's excellent. He's a really good player. I mean, I think maybe be a little bit of a better passer and playmaker. I know he looks, maybe he scores a little bit more than he does distribute. But, I mean, I'm nitpicking here. I mean, I wouldn't change a whole lot. He's never, unlike Julius, who I think physically to some extent can do it, though I think people do overestimate the ability of a 260-pound human being rotating from one side of the court to the other at full speed. I think that's harder than people think. But Brunson just physically is never going to be a good defender. He's not.
Yeah,
he's just not big enough. He's not explosive enough and long enough. So you have to live with that, much like with Julius, that's baked into the equation. But look, he did a great job hitting his threes second half of the year once he started getting going. He hit the open shots. He manipulates in the mid-range. He is a great leader. Like, dude, just don't get hurt. If Jalen Brunson stays healthy the whole year, we're good.
Yeah.
We're good. So just stay healthy, man. Hopefully that all the Team USA stuff in the summer doesn't, wear him down a little bit. Hopefully he's on a beach somewhere right now, resting, getting some R&R. And he's ready to go. He plays like he did last year. He's healthy the whole year, and we're rocking and rolling, and we're good to go.
There's nothing to ask much more. I don't even know what he could even do. I mean, I guess he could play off ball on the Knicks, but that means somebody would have to be a better on ball distributor and playmaker and so forth. But outside of that, there ain't really much more to ask out of Brunson. He's great.
Yeah, I can't really nitpick much on the Brunson situation, man. Jake Allen in the chat said it. I mean, if he can be 90% of what he was last year, they'd still be in a great position. It's just get there healthy. And, even though it seemed like he wasn't impacted in the playoffs, he had the foot injury where they really wasn't sure what the issue was of the foot injury. Then he had the hand injury. So he kind of limped into the postseason, but still didn't seem to impact him as much. But you just hope that the Team USA stuff, that he doesn't get burnt out, because obviously his role is going to be there's going to be a lot expected of him again in year two with the team, man. And as you said, John, I don't expect any improvement defensively necessarily. He's going to scrap. He doesn't bail. He fights hard, but there's limitations there. And so, again, we'll see how they fare against some of the more athletic, taller, more versatile teams. Teams like the Raptors was a tough matchup. When teams put wings on them, will more teams look to put their wing defenders on him to try to slow him down? And how does that impact things? I want to see what the league does to adjust more so to Brunson, and how does he handle that? Can he have another year like he did last year where, just didn't seem like he was fazed by too much?
Yeah, look, and if Isaac Okoro just wasn't one of the worst offensive players in the entire NBA,
right,
if they could have kept him on the floor for more of that first-round series, he gave Brunson legitimate issues as a defender in that series. He was like the only guy all playoffs that did. And, I know we're going to wrap here, so let me just say one more thing, CP. I have not felt this confident about a Knick team and what they're going to be in, 15 or 20 years, and it's terrifying the hell out of me. It really is. Like, I feel really good that they're going to win between 46 and 52 games. Like, unless they have a rash of injuries, I don't see how they don't. Yeah. I just know the way Thibodeau coaches. I know about Brunson. I know about Josh Hart. You know, Julius, and I'm with you. In the regular season, we know what he's going to give us, right? And, you know, Grimes is a good player quickly. I just feel very confident that they're going to be a good, fun, well-coached, good basketball team that's going to win around 48, 50 games. And I don't know about you. I don't remember the last time I felt this way about a team. I didn't feel this good about even the year after they lost to the Pacers with Melo in the playoffs, because I knew that was some fool's gold with all the three-point shooting.
Yeah.
I just feel really good about what this team is. I do. And I don't know how to handle this mentally as a Knicks fan, to be quite honest with you. It's kind of freaking me out, dude.
All I know is that John is jumping out the window right now. And
he's jumping
out
early.
Hasn't started yet.
The season,
and if you're like,
started.
John, throw a window emoji in the chat. Let's get it going.
Getting it going early, man. But, yeah, lots to be excited about. And, listen, you know, the Bucks got who they got, but doesn't necessarily change how I feel about this next season, because I still think that they will be one of the better teams in the East if they can just stay healthy and put it all together, man. But great show, fellas. John, real quick, you know, Giants and Seahawks tango at the Meadowlands on Monday. What do the Giants need to do to get back on track, man? What
no
do they
week
need to
four,
do to get back
no,
on track?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What do they need to do? What do they need to do, man?
No week four game is a must win, especially when you already have one win, but this is close.
Yeah.
I mean, you got games at Buffalo and at Miami coming up, or at Miami, then at Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, those are two of the, you know, five, six, seventh best teams in the NFL. They're awesome. And, look, it doesn't mean Seattle's an easy game. I think the Giants in Seattle before the year, we all thought they would be two of the teams that would be really competing for that NFC wild card spot, you know, around five, you know, nine wins, 10 wins, somewhere in that area. So I think they're fairly evenly matched. Injuries to both teams are huge. Seattle's offensive lineman secondary really banged up. Giants with Andrew Thomas, Saquon Barkley, obviously it's a big deal. This offense is going to have to score on this Seattle defense, because this Seattle offense is legit. Like, Geno's a real quarterback. Like, I know Jet fans think he's
there we go. There we go. Thanks, John.
Don't say that to the Aaron Rodgers guys.
I know, but look, Geno, is he a top 10 quarterback? No, but he'll throw the ball down the field, and he's helped by having a lot of weapons, man. DK Metcalf's awesome. Lockett's awesome. And Jigba's good. They have two good running backs. Pete Carroll's a good coach. So this Giants defense needs to make some plays up front, man. Like, this, you know, a lot of their resources are up front, CP. Lawrence, Leo, Thibodeau, Ojulari, if he plays. Like, these guys have got to stop the run and disrupt the passing game. You got two rookie corners out there that need some help,
and that's
understandable. They're rookies.
Yeah.
You got to help them up front. So somebody's got to step up and make some big plays up front, force a turnover, get some sacks, get some tackle for losses in the run game. You know, figure it out, and then – this offense needs to look a lot more like the second half against Arizona than it does in the other 10 quarters they've played this year. Where Seattle does not have a great pass rush, you should be able to throw the ball. They're banged up in the secondary. You know, if the Giants play well, they can win the game. But if they don't, they're not. So they need to just play a better brand of football than they've showed in every quarter this year except for the two against Arizona.
I need some good vibes. I need to feel good about this game, because – before the season started, I looked at the schedule. I said, October 6th in Miami, Columbus Day weekend. That looks like a good game to go down to and have a nice vacation. So
you're going?
I'm
going
to be there. And little did I know that this Miami offense was going to turn into the greatest show on turf again. The Rams reincarnated, because Tua's just throwing it all over the place. Tyreek Hill, nobody can catch him. I mean, this team is
right. He poster just out here, just running up and down the field.
I mean, they are going bananas right now. So, yeah, that's how my weekend's looking in Miami. But what's up with Saquon? Is Saquon close? What's going on there, man?
He practiced for the first time today, which is the first time he's really practiced since injuring the ankle. So, you know, it's tough with him, though. Like, he's in an impossible spot.
Yeah.
I don't envy him, guys. Like, he comes back too soon. He doesn't look like himself. Then he has a bad year, and then he's on a one-year contract.
Yeah.
He stays out too long. The team loses a few games. They're out of it. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, you're injury prone. We can't pay you, right? So he's in a really tough spot with the ankle. And I don't know if there's a right decision. Never come back before you're able to look kind of like you're supposed to look, because a 50% Saquon Barkley is not really going to help you as much as you need him to.
Yeah.
But he's in a tough spot, and the Giants need him, and he wants to be out there desperately. So I think it'll be a legitimate game day decision on Monday night. We'll warm up pregame to see how he is, and we'll see if he can go. Him and Andrew Thomas, I think the same, maybe even Ojulari, but all three of those guys in the same basket.
Wow. Wow. Oh, well, there it is, man. Well, John, great show. Al, great show as well. And to you guys at home, great show, man. Great to be back. Salute to everybody that came through. Over 1,200 people live, man. So we're getting back into regular season form. Shout out to D-Box 1755, a franchise channel member, says, another great show and congrats, CP, on the WFAN gig. Yes, happy to join the WFAN roster, man. That is a dream come true and certainly a special moment. So hopefully you'll be hearing from me soon on the airwaves. But for now, if you listen on the Odyssey app, you can hear me tango with the Nets fan, the turncoat Evan Roberts, man. They're always trying to, you know, take some sort of victory over the Knicks, man. So I had to call in and set Evan straight on his show with Tiki. Remember that this show is available in audio podcast format. You can catch us on all the major podcast platforms. And support our sponsors, man. Go to manscaped.com. Use promo code KFTV for 20% off plus free shipping. So once again, we will catch up with you guys Sunday. Ian Begley joins us on the show, man. Training camp week kicking off, man. Ian Begley this Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure that you guys hit the subscribe button, hit the share button, and hit the notification bell as well, man. So we will see you guys then. Peace. All right.
Is Begs on vacation this week? Because he was very quiet after the Giannis and after the
holiday
the date
stuff,
trade.
Right? Well, yeah. I don't. Well,